Back in the 60s, the Beatles reminded baby boomers that we can get by with a little help from our friends. But as boomers get older, many are realizing they'll also need a little help taking care of themselves. This is Florida Matters.
Support for Florida Matters comes from the Hospitals of BayCare Health System, providing more than 100 health seminars, classes, and events each month. BayCare's mission is to build a healthier Tampa Bay. Register for a complimentary health seminar, class, or event at BayCareEvents.org.
From the Donna Studio at WSF Public Media, I'm Carson Cooper. Florida's home to the highest concentration of residents in the nation, 65 and older. That means issues involving aging are a big deal in the state. One problem for many is what to do about long-term care. Two experts are here to explain the problem and what the solutions might be. But first, Mary Shedden with Health News Florida introduces you to a woman in Lakeland who gets by with the help of the state's Medicaid long-term care program.
Milagros Medina rents a room in a quiet subdivision on the outskirts of Lakeland. At 68, her arthritis, high blood pressure, and chronic back pain are not going away. And she doesn't want to end up in a nursing home. This retiree who likes being called Miss Millie, she tries to keep going by getting help with chores most people take for granted. She says without financial help from Florida's Medicaid program, she couldn't afford it.
A lot of people don't get the care that they need. I am very grateful to one of my doctors for looking into the system and helping me.
The system she mentions is Medicaid's long-term care program. It serves more than 48,000 of Florida's frailest, residents who cannot live independently but may not need around-the-clock medical care. Many of these low-income Floridians live in nursing homes and assisted living facilities. Others stay home but need help with the basics of daily living. Miss Millie needs help showering and cooking, especially when her arthritis keeps her from gripping a pot handle or a cup. She struggles to get much done on days her home health aide doesn't stop by. Chaz Eidelberg is more modest.
I come three times a week, and I help her with the laundry, folding, ironing, sweeping, mopping, dusting, making beds, grocery shopping, and just basically what you would do at home.
Eidelberg's assistance is what government agencies call custodial care. Medicaid long-term care covers non-clinical health issues, while doctor's appointments and hospital stays are medical in nature. There are limits as to who qualifies. Out are residents with gross incomes above $2,100 a month, or around $25,000 a year. And detailed rules decide the size and kinds of assets that Medicaid-eligible residents or their spouses can keep. Still, Florida has a significant waiting list. In December, the roster was more than 39,000 names deep. The demand comes at a critical time for Medicaid. The Agency for Healthcare Administration is in the final phases of transferring program management to private contractors. Last week, the Tampa Bay area became the fifth region in the state to switch over. The managed care model means private plans will now distribute Medicaid money to facilities and other providers. Agency officials say plans can better coordinate services for participants and save taxpayer money. Justin Senior is the state's deputy secretary for Medicaid.
It's really imperative that the services that someone is receiving in the weeks and the months before the rollout on a daily basis are the exact same services that they receive on day one of the rollout and in the weeks and months after the rollout.
Senior says they can change a plan within 3 months of signing up.
So once someone chooses a plan, they have an additional 90 days to, in essence, kick the tires on that plan, try it out, and can switch plans during that 90-day period for any reason, good reason, bad reason, no reason at all.
Right now, Miss Millie is happy because her plans include Chaz's company. She says the help around the house and rides to church help her body and spirit.
Through her, I am more in touch with other human beings' feelings and what goes on, even in their lives.
For Miss Millie, that's a kind of care money cannot buy. For Florida Matters, I'm Mary Shedden.
Medicaid is the answer for some, but the state federal health program only works if the applicant has assets worth less than $2,000. For others, this can mean paying up to $80,000 a year for residential nursing home. Emma Hemness is an elder law attorney in Brandon. Welcome to Florida Matters.
Thank you very much.
So first of all, some advice. I just start right off the bat with this. When should we begin planning for our or our parents or loved ones' long-term care?
The problem is that most of the time people just plan too late. So there isn't a specific age. If you are children of aging parents, I would strongly encourage you to engage them right now to discuss long-term care planning. And if you are an older person, I would say shortly after retirement, start contemplating long-term care planning. Our ability to live longer and require some support systems in place while we live longer, where we might actually be outliving our assets in terms of the type of care we need, that brings that discussion to the forefront.
Seems like it's a problem that, I mean, it's something you want to start planning even when you're in college and your parents are still starring in those Centrum Silver commercials, you know, riding horseback and, you know, very active, feeling young.
Absolutely. And one of the most important things of getting any type of discussion going is you've got to have a legal foundation. You have to have your legal documents in place before we even begin to take a look at what are your needs going to be in the future. Legal document foundation would be a Florida durable power of attorney, a Florida designation of healthcare surrogate, a living will, and then also other important documents is having your estate plan in place after you've passed away, having a last will and testament or a revocable living trust.
That's great stuff. I'm going to talk more about that in a moment. But this is basically, I mean, to boil it down, a problem that's it's a problem of modern times. We are just outliving our money these days. I'll bet you was not a problem in 1914.
No.
Donna Damiani is VP of the Florida Assisted Living Association and operator of Heather Haven 1 and 2 in Dunedin. Welcome to Florida Matters.
Thank you.
Assisted living. Now, this is where residents are doing some things on their own, but not everything. You're protecting a patient's assets and you monitor health needs. What is the difference between assisted living and long-term care?
Well, assisted living, we go for anywhere from a 2-bed assisted living up to 400-bed assisted living. We are different because we do not require nurses in our facilities.
So you're not really doing anything medical. Maybe are you monitoring their health and making sure their medications are being taken, anything like that? Or is it just sort of like you're helping them with laundry and preparing meals and things like that?
Back in the 80s, assisted living facilities were more of a bed and breakfast. But over the years, I've been in it for 27 years, it has changed so much from a social model more to a medical type model. We do assist with activities of daily living. We assist with bathing and dressing, supervision of self-administration of medication. Because we are a home-like setting, we are allowed to have home health companies come in if they need PT or OT. We have a lot of outside physicians that come in now, podiatrists. So we do provide a lot of services in the assisted living.
And one thing I'll talk about here is cost. And this is a big deal, really. And I get the sense that you either have to be really rich or you have to be really poor to afford long-term care.
That is correct, because the cutoff, ALFs range from anywhere from $1,000 a month up until $5,000 a month for the bigger communities. So long-term care would only kick in if their income was a little under, I think it's about $1,890. So if your income is under $1,890, then we can apply for the long-term care benefits for you, and your assets have to be under $2,000.
Emma Hemness, how many truly middle-class folks are able to manage long-term care?
Oh, very few middle class. And I think that is the biggest crisis that we have, is the misinformation or just simply individuals not understanding how significant the cost is, number one. And then the other piece of misinformation is that they also believe that Medicare, which covers any individual over the age of 65, which is an entitlement of sorts, that Medicare will cover long-term care when it does not. So what we really see is the squeeze of the middle class, middle-income individuals when they trigger a need such as long-term care.
And in the piece we just heard, a woman in Lakeland is among those who have access to Medicaid long-term care. Explain exactly how that works and who has access to that.
Well, you have to meet some very, very stringent regulations if you're going to access the financial assistance program in the state of Florida known as Florida Medicaid. Each state has its own rules, so it further complicates that if you move from one state to another state, you need to understand the rules that are specific to Florida Medicaid. Donna mentioned just a second ago that there is a very, very low asset level, and then there's a very low income level. And you have to meet all the criteria in order to even begin to get in the chute to be able to trigger the benefit. Mm-hmm. Once again, Medicare is something totally different. Medicare is a health insurance program for the 65 and over. It is all about the type of disease that you have. If you can be fixed up, then Medicare will cover it. If you cannot be fixed up and it's going to be long-term or chronic, then your only payor source or your only ability to get some financial assistance is going to be under the Medicaid program, and they're imposing impoverishment standards against you. So that's where the middle class gets squeezed.
Now, you're an attorney. I want to know, have you come across this? Medicaid has rules. You cannot give your money, your assets, to your kids to get those assets below that. Is it a $2,000? You can't have more than $2,000 to qualify. So now they're coming up with these personal service contracts, which basically means the patient is hiring their kids or their relatives. Is that right? That's how it works, to provide home health care, or, you know, even after they've been admitted to a facility. How does that work exactly?
Let me distinguish against, you know, the two things that you mentioned. Giving away assets does create a penalty period, and the penalty periods are constantly changing. We had a recent regulation change that now that penalty period for giving away assets is as long as 5 years. With a personal services contract, essentially, it would be the same thing as you paying individuals at an assisted living facility, home health aides to come into your home. Rather, a lot of people enjoy the relationship with their children. Daughters, for example, large statistics of individuals who stop employment. They quit employment early. They come in and they take care of their parents to keep them in the home or a less restrictive setting, and they have no other source of income, so the parents will pay them. So there's an actual contract that can be made between the parents and the adult child, and that's known as the personal services contract you just mentioned.
But this is still using Medicaid dollars, though, right? It's accessing Medicaid money, which is aimed at the very poor. And in a way, is this sort of gaming the system?
I wouldn't say it is gaming the system as much as it is enhancing the quality of the care that you're receiving. Medicaid is going to provide a very basic level of care, maybe only 2 or 3 hours a day, maybe 3 or 4 times a week. You've got to have a round-the-clock caregiver otherwise. And so in order to meet the criteria, sometimes people do decide to allow their adult child caregiver to be paid in advance, and that's the form of the personal care contract. Now, that child caregiver is bound by that contract to continue to provide those services, and the contract is quite explicit what the child must do. But in exchange, instead of giving away the assets, which creates penalties, it does allow a child to be paid for services, and then the combination of the child providing the care that the parent wants and desires from the child, and then enhancing it with the Medicaid benefit, it creates a very workable solution to keep them out of the nursing home.
Have you seen, are there any limits on that transfer of assets? Have you ever seen any six-figure contracts?
Unfortunately, there has been an aberration every once in a while, and as a community as a whole, elder law attorneys are not in favor of having very large sums under a personal care contract. There are times when, you know, a child will, for a very younger, you know, younger parent who has maybe a 20-year life expectancy, there may be the sum of the services extrapolated over a period of time could be a higher amount, but generally speaking, as a whole, those are aberrations versus the norm.
Donna Damiani, do assisted living facilities and nursing homes care really about where the money comes from? Aren't they just concerned about getting paid and taking care of the patient?
Yes, the long-term care, going back in the 80s when I first started in the assisted living industry, we didn't have the Medicaid back then. We were taking care of residents for approximately $585 a month. Compared to what a nursing home now will cost under the Medicaid system, it's anywhere from $6,000 to $7,000 a month. So under the long-term care, with the insurance companies, what they're paying us is significantly less than what they would be paying if somebody had to be in a nursing facility.
So what are you doing? I mean, you do have patients, and how many folks are at Heather Haven?
I have two buildings, and I am licensed for 40 residents altogether.
Mm-hmm. And they're either from wealthy situations or the very poor, is that right?
That is correct.
Yeah. Emma Hemness, state lawmakers have sort of seen this personal service contract thing, and they're thinking about tweaking it, unless they already have. Are there proposals to change this law in any way?
We don't see any proposals right now on the horizon. There was one last year, and essentially it discriminated against adult child caregivers. It didn't make any distinction between a home health aide or a third party coming in and getting the same benefit, the same type of personal care contract. It specifically discriminated against a child doing this. And understandably, I know that the legislature was trying to address the issue and to try to bring into compliance, you know, legitimate contracts. We don't have the proposal last year because we actually created a dialogue between elder law attorneys and the Department of Children and Families, which is the financial approval agent for all Medicaid in the state of Florida. We actually created a dialogue, and we actually worked towards creating a better system, and that actually is in the process of, it's still ongoing.
Now, we've talked about lots of folks who don't plan for this inevitability. I mean, there are, you know, you're going to need long-term care at some point if you're in good health, you know, as you're younger. But many people don't do it because they figure, I just can't afford it. So why plan on something that I'm just not going to be able to afford? What sort of options do folks have, and what should they be looking at? If you're middle class, you're not going to qualify for Medicaid, you're not wealthy, what do you do?
I think the number one opportunity is just to set a plan in place, meaning what are our goals? What do we want to have in the future? I think being taken care of either in our home or at a facility like Donna's, that is our number one goal. Nobody wants to be in a long-term care environment such as a nursing home if they can keep from doing that. I would say that if you're healthy enough and that you can afford it out of your income, then looking at long-term care insurance is definitely the way to go, because the long-term care insurance helps you leverage the dollars you have. But a lot of middle-class individuals are either too ill by the time they need to go through the underwriting process, or they don't have the sums coming in where they can actually pay a premium.
And so there is private long-term care insurance, and at some point the company's not going to sign you up because it's...
And that's the unfortunate aspect, because there are individuals out there that want to be fiscally responsible. They don't want to rely upon government assistance. They understand the system is burdened, but they have gotten there too late, or they simply do not have, if they have a Social Security check of only $900 a month, there is no way they would be able to afford a monthly premium for long-term care insurance.
We're talking about long-term care in Florida and the fact that so few folks are able to afford it. We'd love to hear your stories. Share them on our Facebook page or via email, floridamatters@wusf.org. I'm Carson Cooper. This is Florida Matters. This is Florida Matters. I'm Carson Cooper. My guests are elder care attorney Emma Hemness and Donna Damiani, VP of the Florida Assisted Living Association and the owner of Heather Haven 1 and 2 in Dunedin. Emma Hemness, do you think one of the problems in getting folks to plan for assisted living or nursing homes is, you know, a lot of folks are just leery about the whole nursing home assisted living thing? I mean, there's a reputation.
Well, I think... I think the misinformation is number one. I don't think they have accurate information because, again, as we discussed a little bit earlier, I believe they think that Medicare is going to cover every aspect of what they need. The other aspect of it is, yes, there are individuals that are adamant, I'm not leaving my home unless I'm going out in a coffin. Mm-hmm. And so they think that any other aspect of their care isn't going to be as nice as being at home. But that's not necessarily true. So it's a very open discussion. I like to engage the individual in thinking about that as an elder law attorney. And then if they need any further guidance, I'm hoping that the adult child will be a strong advocate and be able to take them and allow them to tour assisted living facilities and see the type of wonderful arrangements that are there. And they can have more socialization because any individual that's in their home and they have no socialization, they are not going to be as happy and as well off and as healthy as individuals who could go into a community and enjoy the community and have socialization.
Donna Damiani, is there a stigma that you have to overcome? You know, when folks maybe are coming in, looking around, what do you have to do to sort of sell them and make them feel a little bit better about what decision they may make?
I think it's more of the home-like atmosphere, which is required now under the long-term care, under the home and community-based services. The long-term care insurance companies are required to do a tour when they contract with the facilities to make sure that it feels like a home-like setting, that if Mrs. Smith would like to have breakfast at 10 o'clock in the morning rather than at 6:30 in the morning when it starts being made, that she has that right to do that. She feels like she's at home. And I think what it is when I have families come in, I show them around, I tour them, I tell them the services that we have to offer. And I'm a very hands-on owner administrator, so I try to offer all those interactions with the other residents, and it works very well.
Emma Hemnes, before a family begins the transition of a loved one from home to assisted living, and you mentioned this earlier, what legal steps ought to be taken, documents and wills and trusts?
Well, again, I think the most important document that you could possibly have is going to be a Florida durable power of attorney. And again, I'm going to caution right now because we had an enormous change to the statute that creates durable powers of attorney. So out-of-state powers of attorney will not necessarily work in Florida anymore since October of 2011. So knowing who you're working with, for example, a power of attorney that I draft with a very, very strong elder law, long-term care planning, what type of needs are we going to need in the future, making sure that all those authorities are in it. That's going to be the one that if the concentration is towards making sure that we have all the authorities we need to adapt to a change in a healthcare situation or moving into an assisted living facility and making those arrangements, that's something that is number one on the priority list. Then you have the, you know, making sure that the person that you want, you know, if this is your adult child, and not necessarily all children are created equal, so choosing the one that is going to do the best thing for you under the circumstances, making sure that one is in place. So that's a foundational. That is definitely the foundation that you start from.
You know, one of the toughest things, I was thinking about this a moment ago, I think for families, many families, is just sitting down with someone and to start talking about nursing homes and managed care and long-term care. It's like talking about a will, you know, especially when you're younger. It's sort of creepy in a way. I mean, how do you get past that? How do you actually start that conversation?
It is going to be a very difficult conversation, and I'm putting it from the perspective of a lot. My clients over a period of time has actually evolved from discussing it with the caregiver spouse for the sick spouse that they're trying to caregive for, to a shift to actually probably dealing more with the adult children. And the adult children are very, very interested in making sure, you know, there's early intervention or that the parents remain as independent as possible. But there is this knee-jerk reaction by the parents saying, why are you involved in my stuff? I am very independent. Why are you getting involved in my business? So sometimes it is very helpful to have a meeting where the parents actually allow the children to be involved, and then we can just say what we're just simply doing is we're making sure that we're planning ahead. We're getting these things involved, in place now so that we can, react rather than, picking up the pieces. The other part of our law office, the elder law office, is that if you don't have these things in place, if you haven't had the conversation, then basically you have failed, and where you're going to end up is in guardianship court. And guardianship right now in our court system is a good $4,000 to $5,000 expense that could have been avoided by just having these conversations and having these planning documents in place ahead of time.
So you hang that over the parents?
We kind of do, unfortunately.
Do it the easy way or the hard way.
Yes, unfortunately.
What about that?
Unfortunately, in the state of Florida, over the years, I've seen a lot of the people that live here do not have any immediate family members. They may have children that they don't speak to anymore, and I see a lot of those through Department of Children and Family Services. Well, I'll go out and see them living in not so good conditions and be able to bring them into the ALF, and then we have to reach out to people like Emma, or they might need a legal guardian, or if they're competent, a power of attorney, because unfortunately these people that don't have other people involved are a lot of the ones that do get exploited financially.
Now that's a very good point. You bring that up. How many of those would qualify for Medicaid assistance, though?
I mean, most of them. I would say probably the ones that we see through DCF, probably at least 75% to 80% are the ones that are on the lower income side.
All right. Well, final thoughts. What should families listening to this right now do next?
I think a bigger issue is, I think we've given you just a sliver of what Donna and I do, and it is so much more complex than what we've basically had an opportunity to scratch the surface on. There is an alphabet soup of the agencies and the acronyms. I think you got to work with somebody who is reputable. I think you got to work with somebody on the elder law side. Elder law is the area of law specifically designed for assisting individuals with long-term care concerns. And then you've got to work with the reputable assisted living facilities for living arrangements in the future. But again, just finding somebody, making sure that you're working with a qualified, reputable, and knowledgeable individual, because these things are extremely complex.
Donna?
I agree with Emma. Like I said, the people that that I see that do not have any immediate family member may have been exploited by somebody. It could have been a neighbor saying that, they were taking care of them, and they do get exploited, or they live in deplorable conditions where they need to be moved out immediately. And unfortunately, the way the state works under the Department of Elder Affairs, their form that gets filled out once they're in the assisted living facility, unfortunately, they meet all the needs. So they go to the bottom of the waiting list. So I have a resident right now that's still on the waiting list who is only currently getting $676 a month, and he's still sitting on the waiting list since last January.
Well, as you said, there are plenty of resources out there, lots of links, and it can be very confusing. We've got some help for you to guide you through all this on our website, WUSFnews.org. Click on the Florida Matters link up there near the top of the page. Elder Care Attorney Emma Hemness and Donna Damiani, VP of the Florida Assisted Living Association and operator of Heather Haven 1 and 2 in Dunedin, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having us.
We'd love to hear your stories and experiences with long-term care as well. Share them with other listeners on our Facebook page or via email, floridamatters@wusf.org. Florida Matters is produced by Lottie Watts and is a production of WUSF Public Media. I'm Kirsten Cooper. Thanks for listening.